Hello and welcome to UK Carcast, the podcast by non-sport trading car collectors for non-sport trading car collectors. I'm your host, Paul Bynes, and this is, depending on your superstition level, episode 12A or episode 13, Women of Geekdom. Hi and welcome to the show. It's another long one, which means unfortunately I've had to cut it in two halves again. Yes, this is another one of those two-parter episodes. So please do try to remember to download both parts, otherwise you'll be missing some really interesting conversation. In the first half we have an interview with Roxanne Tozer, the publisher of Nonsport Update magazine, and Diane of the Nonsport Trading Card World. In the second half we have two returning guests, Joanna Colbus, long-time sketch card collector, and Kate Red Bradley, a sketch card artist and, as is revealed during the course of the interview, a newcomer to the world of collecting cards. If you're listening to this, you've downloaded the first part, so as soon as this has ended, please do go ahead and download the second part, otherwise you'll miss out on what, to me at least, was a fun conversation. This episode is entitled Women of Geekdom. The reason for that should be fairly obvious. I'm speaking to three women involved in the hobby of non-sport to get their experiences and perspective on the hobby in general. The idea came out of a conversation I had with Joanna Colbus on our January episode, where she suggested it might be a good idea to talk about the role of women in the non-sport hobby and the non-sport collecting community in general. Et voila, here we are, we have the show. I didn't realise when I was recording it just how long it would go, so once again, my apologies for the fact that it is in two parts. My apologies also for the sound quality in some sections of the interview. This is not down to any problems with the interviewees, it's down to bandwidth and technical issues at my side of things. I've tried to fix as many of the sound issues as possible, but there's still one or two bits there. Bear with me. Persevere, you should get an awful lot of useful and hopefully entertaining stuff from both interviews. So without further ado, here's Roxanne Tozer. I'm very pleased to welcome Roxanne Tozer, the publisher of Nonsport Update magazine. Roxanne, very pleased to have you on the episode. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You've been involved. Obviously, you've been producing Nonsport Update magazine for, it's getting close to 20 years now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We started in October of 1990.
Yeah, a couple of years away from the 20th anniversary.
No, we'll be starting our 20th year with our next issue.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Yes, sorry.
Yes, of course. No, that's all right.
I lose track of the years.
It will be an exciting time for us. In 2009 is when we actually start, and that will be very exciting the whole year.
Yeah. When you first started the magazine, did you honestly have a thought to it lasting this long?
Well, I didn't really think about it. They say that if you're in the magazine business and it lasts for 5 years, that you're doing wonderful. And being that we're starting our 20th, I guess we're doing just great. And there have been many magazines, non-sport magazines, that have come and gone during this time. And we're the sole survivors other than the rapper. The rapper was here actually before we were, but we're entirely two different types of magazine, and there's room for both of us in this hobby.
How did you first – we talk about the history, and obviously the magazine's going for nearly 20 years, but your involvement with non-sport goes before that. How did you first get involved with non-sports and collectibles in general?
Well, I have three sons. Harris is the youngest, and the two older sons – collected baseball cards. It mainly started because they had cousins down the street and their cousins were a little bit older and they collected baseball cards. So my oldest son, of course, had to do the same thing. And then along comes Harris, and he really was not that interested in sport cards. But yet he liked to go to flea markets, swap meets with us. And the other two boys didn't really enjoy doing that, but Harris did. And but he would get a little bit bored if we were looking at sports cards. And one day I said to him, you know, we have a lot of non-sport cards around here. Maybe you would like to get those organized and start collecting them. And he said that he thought that sounded like a good idea. So we started digging them out, and some of them had been heavily played with. They looked like they had been run over by a truck at least three times.
Right.
But some of them were still in decent shape. And it happened to be around the time that Star Wars came out. And there was a local wholesaler, so a candy wholesaler. So we went over to the wholesaler to see if they had any non-sport cards, and they had Star Wars. And we bought a few boxes of Star Wars, and we sorted them into sets, and we put an ad in one of the publications, and we were selling the sets for $3.50, mm-hmm. Three for $10. And we got so many orders, it was unbelievable, because what we didn't know was this was one of the first areas in the country to get the Star Wars cards.
Right.
So then we, of course, had to go back and buy more boxes, and we ended up going to wholesalers in counties all around here, buying up all the Star Wars boxes that we could possibly find. And Harris was young, and so he helped me with the sorting and the packaging and everything, but I did all the letter writing. In fact, I used to sign things with his name. Mm-hmm. And that's we got involved in the mail order business, and it was just fun, and other things came out, and we continued. We never did any of the sports cards by mail, just the non-sport cards.
So it's effectively all Harris's fault for not being interested in sports cards.
That's right. And so it's miraculous that he came back into the business. He was living out of this area for a short time, but he got very interested when we started the magazine and said he would like to come back to this area and work with us on the magazine.
What was the inspiration for starting the magazine? Did you see that there was a gap in the market for a magazine covering non-sports?
Well, yes, and what actually happened was at the time we started the magazine, there were a lot of strikes going on in baseball and football. And so a lot of the sports card dealers were starting to buy non-sport cards. Mm-hmm. And I would have some of them call me up and they would say, oh, you're going to be so happy. We're going to drive these prices through the ceiling. You're going to make so much money.
Right.
Well, we did not want that to happen in a million years. We love non-sport cards. It's a fun hobby.
Yeah.
And so we talked with Chris Benjamin, who was involved with the Sports Americana price guides and happened to be a very good friend of ours. And we decided to start the magazine, really, so that we could stop these people from what they were trying to do to our hobby. Mm. And if we didn't accomplish anything else, we did accomplish that at the time.
Yeah, because I know for a while there, the sports sector went seriously silly on prices and odd cards and things like that. People are really hardcore about the sports cards, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are.
It hasn't got to quite that level with the non-sports, though.
No, but I have always felt that, unfortunately, in the non-sport hobby, we often copy things that happen in the sports hobby.
Yeah.
And it's not for the betterment of the hobby either, and we don't learn lessons by mistakes that happen there either. But
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well, exactly. I know a few years after you started the magazine, non-sports really took off in a big way. Manufacturers were really putting out huge quantities of cards and trying to capitalize
on
the market. The collecting market suffered as a result, didn't it?
Yes. Well, we had a huge subscription base at that time, but there was just too much product being put out, and then all the dumping took place because there was too much product, and
yeah.
The companies would have to dump, and then people were mad about that, and it just wasn't the most pleasant time.
No, and you can still see, if you go to some fairs, you can still see some of that product floating around at bargain basement prices. It's still out there, isn't it?
Yes, it is, although some of it, I guess, has gotten some worth back, but there still is a lot of it that will never get any worth.
You don't see that happening again in the future. I mean, there's a few companies now producing cards, and they are putting out a regular number of sets, but they seem to be doing a more restricted print run, as it were. They're not doing so many boxes now as perhaps they once did.
No, they are not doing that, and they are not dumping product, and we're very happy about that.
Sure.
I think they learned their lesson.
Yeah, once bitten, twice shy.
Yes.
Obviously, being a woman in a hobby that I suppose to most people is generally perceived to be male dominated, it's non-sport cards are probably seen in the same boat as comics or comic books, and I suppose the typical stereotype of the collector would be the comic book guy from The Simpsons. As I'm sure you know, and I've noticed from the shows and from my friends, it's not actually the case. Women make up just as many collectors as men do. Is that something that's changed in the years you've been involved with the hobby?
Absolutely. When I first became involved, there were hardly any women involved. And I would be behind a table at a show, and my husband would be there, and somebody would come to the table, and they would look at him and ask him questions like I wasn't there. And it was actually my business, and I knew more than he did.
Yeah.
But because I was a woman, they would not even ask me a question. But there are many more women in the hobby these days, and that's a good thing.
How did you tend to behave or react when that sort of thing happened? Was it a case of, oh, well, that happens and we'll just try and change things around gradually? Or did you go out and say, well, hey, this is my stand. I'm the one in charge. Ask me.
No, I never quite came on that strong. But oftentimes my husband, Marlon, would say, ask Roxanne. She knows the answers and turn it over to me. Or I would just say, I think I can help you. And eventually people started knowing who I was and things were different.
Yep.
But even to this day, if somebody comes to a show and they don't really know me, the same thing can still happen.
Yeah. How do they tend to react when they realize that actually you're the one in charge?
Well, usually they will accept that. I mean, I've had people that still continue to ignore me. but that's their tough luck.
Roxanne, it has to be said, I've got people who tend to ignore me as well, but that's for entirely different reasons, I'm sure. But obviously, the market's changed and grown and shrunk and grown and shrunk depending on the financial circumstances of the world it's based in and on the popularity of different sets and things like that. You've done a lot more shows now. You tend to take stands at a lot of shows, don't you?
Not as many as we had for a while, really. We have decreased our shows a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
It just became, well, in the beginning, there weren't that many shows, and it was a big event. You would really look forward to it. Then there were more and more shows, and then shows started getting further and further away. We used to do the Sports Card National, which moves to different parts of the country. And then it got to the point where you had to ship the stuff and worry about getting it to your booth and worry about getting it back home. It wasn't fun. So we stopped doing that, and we really just do some non-sport card shows now. We don't do any sports card shows.
And you've had an involvement in hoping to organize the Philly show at Allentown for the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, Frank Richter, who has been the longtime promoter ever since the beginning, was getting a little discouraged because it was just costing him too much money at the place where he was running it. And he was ready to give up the show entirely, and we didn't want to see that happen. He asked us if we could help him. We said we would look around to see if we could find a different location for the show, one that would not be so costly. And it was not easy, but we found a place, and it's just great. And so we ran a show just on our own, and it did very well. It's always hard when you change location. Not as many people will come for one reason or another. And then Frank again said to us that he thought we should just take over the show. And we said, no, we really want to partner with you. You've been doing it all this time. And we think it'll be much better if we're partners because you know how to run things at the door. And with the 50th show coming up, we certainly did not want them leaving before the 50th show. So we've now partnered with them for two shows, and everything is going just perfectly fine.
And the 50th is coming up next year, I think, isn't it?
That will be May 2nd and May 3rd of 2009, and we're planning a dinner in honor of the Richters. And we hope to have some other events. It's a little early. We're trying to make some plans, but we really do hope to make this a very exciting event, not just a plain old show.
Yeah. The reason I started talking about shows, apart from to mention Allentown, of course, is that from the shows you have been to, as I said earlier, that the perception outside of the hobby is that it's a boys' club. And you mentioned at the start that there weren't that many women around when you first became involved with it. Have you noticed a fairly even mix in the shows or over the years, or has that sort of balance changed between male and female collectors?
No, there is certainly not an even mix. It is still a male-dominated hobby, but there are more women. And, well, early on when we just had our mail order business, I got a reputation at the shows for buying non-sport cards. And the baseball card dealers were just thrilled because they had sold some of their they would buy big collections, and then it would be non-sport cards, and they didn't care about the non-sport cards. So they would sell them to men who paid them next to nothing, and I started paying them a fair price.
Yeah.
And so I started getting all the cards. That was one good thing, and I don't know if that had anything to do with me being a woman or not, but they would all come to me with their cards. And another thing I could mention about women in the hobby, a lot of the men that did the early shows really dressed like slobs. I mean, it was a disgrace. And I was always very careful about the way I dressed and wore really nice clothes to all of the shows. I don't know. I guess that helped with my reputation too.
I have asked a few other people about this, what it is about the hobby that seems to maybe put some women collectors off or put young girls off from collecting cards, because women collect things as much as anybody else. I know for a fact you have an extensive collection of bobbleheads, don't you?
Yes, I do.
So it's not that women don't collect things. I'm just wondering whether perhaps it's the themes that are to be found in non-sport and whether that's something that's changed.
It often is. The subject matter is probably more appealing to boys, but maybe it's which came first, the chicken or the egg, were there more boys, more men, and that's why they have boyish subjects? I don't know. I mean, Batman. How many girls are going to collect Batman? I don't think too many.
Because obviously in the very early days of the non-sport cards, I mean, they were cigarette cards and things like that. But, I mean, you had popular film serial heroes with subjects for sets, and you had presidents.
Yeah, Hopalong Cassidy, Davy Crockett, they all appealed to the male population rather than females.
But in recent years, of course, we've had TV shows and films where the leading characters or the main characters are very strong females. I'm thinking shows like Buffy and Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, and Charmed and things like that. How much has that, do you think, have that subjects based, card sets based on those sort of things changed the collecting range?
Well, I think they definitely have brought more females into the hobby. But then again, I say, is it the chicken and the egg or not? You know, which came first, the women entering? And so then the manufacturers thinking they needed to find some things that would appeal to women? Or did the women come in first? It's hard to say.
You're noticing more of a mix at more recent shows now, are you? Or is it still fairly male?
It's still fairly male, but there are more females. And, I still hear men saying, gee, my wife really liked this one kind of a card. I'm so happy because maybe she'll come with me now to the shows and start collecting those cards. And when I was in the mail order business, the stories that I would hear were a riot about how they would keep secrets from their wives about how much money they were spending on cards. It was a scream. And I used to say to them, why don't you tell your wife you're not out drinking or gambling? They should be happy. All you're doing is collecting cards.
I wouldn't mind betting that still happens even now.
I'm sure.
I know there's people that have posted on Card Talk, which of course is an on-sport update message board, that say, I didn't tell my girlfriend or partner or wife how much I spent on that card. Have you noticed that the male dress improving over the years, or are they still fairly slobby?
No, well, we don't do the baseball card shows anymore, but at the non-sport card shows, everybody is dressed, I would say, very nicely. We don't see any slobs anymore, which is great.
Oh, that's good. You haven't seen me, mind you, and you definitely haven't come to any UK shows. I'm sure Harris will tell you after he comes back from Birmingham that exactly what we're like over here. So.
Oh, I'm sure it's not that bad.
Maybe not, but it's Jeans and t-shirts prevail, I have to say, but then I think that's probably standard.
Well, as long as they're clean and your stomach isn't hanging out, there's nothing wrong with jeans and t-shirts.
We shall draw a veil over that. Moving on to the state of the hobby now, Roxanne. In the past, a set of cards was just that, a set of cards. You got maybe a stick of gum in the package with a few cards, but you really had just the base set. And even to this day, some of those are really collectible. Now, of course, it's all changed. We've got tons and tons of chases, and there's multiple levels of albums and foils and autographs and costumes and sketches and Lord knows what else. Actually, what do you think of the current state of the hobby?
I do not find it to be healthy. Like you say, we started with just the cards. And then the next thing, there were stickers. So you would get one sticker in a pack. And sometimes that could be problematic. If you wanted to sell a complete set to someone, you wanted the whole sticker set as well as the base set. But if you bought a couple of boxes, you can usually end up with a fairly decent amount of sets. Mm-hmm. And it was a variety. So then we started with all of the holographic cards and spectra cards and whatever they called them. And they were beautiful and they were exciting. But now there are so many levels of chase cards that, as far as I'm concerned, it's impossible to collect a whole set of anything. And it has turned off people from this hobby. People have dropped out of the hobby because they just can't afford it. And the manufacturers spend a lot of money on the base cards and all of the text and all of the pictures. And then people just treat those, the base sets, as nothing, and they practically give them away at shows. And all people care about are the autographs and the sketch cards and the costume cards and what have you.
Yeah.
And I was a lot happier when things were just a set and maybe a couple of stickers to go with it or a couple of special cards. I just think it has gotten completely out of hand. Yeah. And I don't know where it will ever stop.
I know a number of manufacturers have tried in recent years to do simplified sets where you maybe have a couple of foils and the base cards and pitch them at a slightly lower price. But they don't seem to have sold precisely because there are no autographs, no costume cards and things like that in there. So the hardcore collectors say, well, not that interested in it, and the kids still can't afford it or they can't find it. Do you find a lot of that going on? I mean, retail stores don't seem to be stocking them as much as they used to.
No, they don't. And I guess we can blame the manufacturers for changing the whole tone of the hobby. Now people just do expect all of the fancy cards, and they don't have much interest in anything but those cards.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, why don't they just do a whole set of autographs and forget everything else?
I've got a vague memory in the back of my mind that someone did actually try doing that once, didn't they? But I don't know.
I think they have some similar things.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, originally it was a case of, well, not originally, but I know when I first became involved in the hobby, which is about 10, 15 years ago. So I'm a comparative newcomer. But you had a base set and you had one autograph in a pack and maybe there was a foil. But I mean, recent sets, you've had complete set of cards that are all foil. Four or five autographs in a pack plus one or two sketches, plus a costume card, plus a lenticular card, plus all sorts of bits and pieces. Apart from the sheer expense of buying a pack, especially from a UK perspective, considering the exchange rate on the dollar and the cost of shipping them over here, it's mind-boggling confusing over what, you know, to keep track of what cards from a particular set you've got, because sometimes you've got four or five nine-card chase sets, and which one is that? What one have I got? What haven't I got?
That's right. Absolutely. And it's hard for me to keep up with some of these things, even though we run the magazine. And
yeah.
We just recently ran an auction, and we had a lot of consignment items in this auction, and there were all kinds of chase cards. And I had a really hard time figuring out what they were talking about, you know, which ones went with which number in the auction. I certainly hope that we're sending all the right cards to the right people.
So do I. You could get a lot of disgruntled collectors. The auctions are probably about the only contact you have now with directly selling to people, aren't they?
Well, and it's not really our items. They are consignment auctions, and yeah, people give us the items to sell. Yeah, and they're fun because we make them. They're not internet. It's not eBay. It's phone bid auctions. So you're right. We do have contact with collectors, and we get into nice conversations, and we've made some nice friends during the auctions. They're a lot of work, but they're fun too.
Yeah, you mentioned eBay. Obviously, when you started buying and selling cards, there wasn't even such a thing as the internet. It was, you had to go to stores and you had to go to stands and you had to have mail order and envelopes and so on and so forth. And eBay seems to have made things a whole lot easier for anybody really to set up and buy and sell things. Is that something that possibly you would have done had it been around when, or had you been starting up now? Would you have gone to done eBay straight off?
Probably would have. It's a little hard to say because it wasn't there. And what I did was I used to make up my own list. I would have it printed up of everything I had for sale. And from running the ads, I got a mailing list and I would send it out to all of the people. And that's the way we used to work it. And but that was, like you say, before eBay. But
I know a lot of people on the dealer side of things have issues with eBay in that it's effectively taking trade from them unless they actively pursue eBay as well. Because, as I said, anybody can sell anything on there now. A lot of collectors just go straight to eBay. They won't try and find their local dealer, or they won't go to a show.
You're right, and that does hurt. It definitely does, and people just sit in their houses. It's so easy. You just get on the computer, and three clicks, and you're done.
Yeah.
And it's very hurtful to people doing shows and people having stores, and all the human contact is lost.
You were saying about all the sets and the complications of sets, and obviously that has an impact on the magazine and the price guide and the sort of coverage you can give to that. I know Harris has mentioned in the past how it's getting more and more difficult to work out how to arrange the price guide. You've experimented with having it in different chunks in different issues and having the whole thing in one but cutting it back. That still presents you with something of a problem, doesn't it?
It definitely does, and we're going to try something else new beginning in 2009. At one time, we had what we called the pop-out price guide, that you could pop the price guide out of the magazine, and it was a separate thing.
I remember that, well, yes.
This is not going to be a pop-out, but the price guide is going to be separate. So people will be able to take just the price guide with them to shows, and that's very nice. And we're putting the whole alphabet back together again, A to Z, and we're going to take out all of the sets that really get no action. The prices never change. Nobody looks at them. I'm sure there'll be some problems. People will want things put back in, and if we hear from enough people, we'll put them back in. But we're going to take out a lot of the sets so that we can have just a 24-page price guide, and we're going to, again, abbreviate the new sets. They're not going to be complete full listings. Is just absolutely impossible. And we hope and pray that this will work. I myself cannot stand the price guide being divided into two issues, A to L and M to Z.
Yeah.
It just seems like any time I want to find something, it's in the other issue. And I didn't want to do that in the first place, but it was the only thing that we could do.
Well, otherwise, if you hadn't done that, I suspect the magazine could have ended up being the size of Lord of the Rings practically every issue, and it would have been just interactive post.
Yeah, and I mean, with the cost of printing going up and paper, we just can't do it. We just cannot make the magazine any larger. We don't have as much ad support as we once had, and it's the state of the economy here. And so we have to just try to do what we can do to hang in there.
Roxanne, you mentioned the economy and the sort of effect that's having on the cost of printing and publishing the magazine. But it has an effect on the purchasing decisions of the collectors as well. I know that the recent Allentown show, the fall show, which is usually the busier of the two that are held during the year, was a little quieter than perhaps you might have liked.
I don't think that necessarily is the busier of the two shows. I have always felt that the spring show is the busier show because if you live on the East Coast, in the United States and you have a lot of bad weather during the winter, and when spring comes, people are really happy to get out of the house and go to the show. So I always find that one to be a little bit busier. But this fall show was not great. We were very disappointed. We did a lot of advertising and did what we could to get the people there, and we just did not get the crowd that we anticipated. And in fact, on the second day of the show, we had free admission. And I will say that we did have maybe more people than we normally have on the second day of a show. Mm-hmm. But the show is held in a place called the Merchant Square Mall. And this is really just, it's not a mall, it's a building. And in this building are, like 25 different little antique and collectible shops. It's a real fun place. Well, that whole mall was as dead as could be. You could have thrown a bowling ball down the hallway. And so it wasn't just our show, it's just the whole mall. And then we just finished an auction. And it was probably the worst auction we've ever had. We had something like 29 items that did not even get a bid. And usually everything gets a bid, or maybe three or four items don't get a bid.
Yeah. How much of that do you pin on a declining interest in the hobby, perhaps? Or on how much of it do you pin on the current economic situation? Because, I mean, with banks going down and mortgages at the risk of foreclosure and people thinking, well, can I spend money on a card, or should I really be saving that money just in case I get let go at the end of the month? How much is that sort of thing affecting attendance at shows and the hobby in general?
I think it is a very big effect. People cannot spend discretionary money when they're worried about, are they going to have a job tomorrow? Are they going to have food? Are they going to have their house? And, I mean, what's happening in the stock market here is just awful. A couple of days before the show, we got a letter, from about our stocks, and I said to my husband, don't show it to me. Don't tell me about it. I just don't even want to know.
No.
But that's not maybe the best attitude either. You can't stick your head in the ground. But at the time of the show, I just really did not want to hear about that. But I think it's definitely affecting everything. And yeah. Maybe people should realize that if they would buy something like cards, it's better than putting money in the stock market. I think there's a better chance of it maintaining its value and maybe going up in value in the stock market.
It follows then to us, really. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the hobby in general?
Well, I always try to be optimistic. We try to keep the magazine optimistic. And I'm pessimistic about this whole country right now. So we do have the election coming up, and hopefully things will change after the election. It just has to get better.
Yeah, maybe a lot of people, I suspect, are possibly waiting for that as well, to see what happens with the election and see if having a new president of whichever political color might actually stir things up and settle things down a bit.
I think it won't happen immediately. It can't possibly, but at least if we head in a better direction, things will get better.
Yeah. Certainly looking at the release schedules or the announced releases from a lot of the card companies, they seem to be pushing ahead with a release schedule of some sort, even if it's perhaps a little lighter than it used to be. But there do seem to be a lot more companies trying out there. Is that something you've noticed?
Well, no, I don't think we're getting that many new companies. And
perhaps I should have worded it. It's some of the smaller companies that maybe put out one set a year, they're starting to put out maybe two or three sets a year
in
these areas. Yeah.
I have noticed that, and I hope that does continue.
It's good if for no other reason than it gives collectors more of a choice and more opportunity to look at something other than the major TV franchises, I suppose.
Right. And, they try different things. Some of them work and some of them don't. And sometimes when we hear about something coming out, we think, why?
So you're optimistic about the magazine completing its 20th year then?
Oh, yes, yes. Have no fear. We'll be here at the end of 20.
And hopefully at the end of 30 and near the end of 40.
Yes, right, right.
So Harris is obviously coming over in a couple of weeks to do the show in Birmingham. How do you feel about the foreign market? Obviously, the magazine is sold abroad and you have deals for subscriptions abroad. Does that make up a significant minority of your readership?
Well, it certainly helps. We're very thankful for all of our overseas subscribers, and I think that Harris coming over for that show does help, because there again, human contact with the collectors.
Yeah, I know I speak for a lot of people over here when we meet up with Harris. It's good to actually sort of meet somebody with an involvement in the hobby from America. We don't get that much over here. We get a few people come over occasionally and visit shows and things, but we don't get an awful lot of hands-on contact. So meeting Harris and trying to steer him into the UK way of things is always good fun.
Yeah, especially when he wears earmuffs, right?
Ah, well done. Thank you for mentioning the earmuffs. He's never been able to live them down.
I know. It's funny.
we keep making a joke of him at his expense. I hope he realizes it's entirely sympathetic.
Oh, yeah.
We all love having him over. Have you ever been tempted to come over yourself? I know you, in one of the issues a while back, you did actually come over to look at cards over here, didn't you? Have you been Have you been tempted to come over and do one of the shows instead of Harris?
Yes, I've been maybe with Harris.
Oh, with him, yeah.
We've been tempted, but we are really a very small firm, and it's hard for us all to get away at the same time.
Yeah.
So.
I know this is the first year since Non-Sport Update has had a stand at the Member Bealey show that it doesn't involve Harris missing Thanksgiving, so it's always blessed with that.
Yeah, that we are thankful for that. It will be nice to have him here for Thanksgiving dinner.
Indeed. We try to make up for it, but we can't quite match the Thanksgiving experience, it has to be said. I mentioned you've been over here before. As I mentioned, an article that you wrote some time ago about a trip to London. You actually came over to look at some rare and unusual cards. Is that do you still have an interest in the collecting side of things, or is it more now just the publishing?
No, we still have our entire collection, and we do occasionally still add things to the collection.
Yeah. Do you have particular, I suppose it's being a publisher of a magazine that's looking for advertising from a variety of companies, it's a bit difficult to say, oh, well, we like this in particular. But do you have a particular area? Is it more the recent cards you like, or do you stick with the vintage stuff that you've been collecting for a while?
Well, I like the things from the 60s,
yeah.
Like the Beverly Hillbillies and Gilligan's Island, Hogan's Heroes, those kind of – Mars Attacks. I love the Mars Attacks set, Battle. I like the artwork sets.
Yeah. So, it's interesting you mentioned the artwork, because obviously a popular thing – in the last couple of years is the sketch card set. They seem to really have taken off.
Yeah, they have.
And a lot of companies are moving into the illustrated sets, rather more comic based or comic book based rather than the old original sets. I mean, I know there used to be some beautiful sets that were devoted to original artwork.
Yeah, the FPG company for a while was doing artwork sets, and I loved those sets, and it acquainted me with a lot of artists that I didn't know anything about and their work, and it was really beautiful, but they stopped doing those. Well, Comic Images was doing some of those sets too, with Julian Boris, and that was just a phase that we went through, and now we're into the sketch cards and autographs.
Yeah. Which I dare say, again, probably next year or the year after, assuming that Non-Sport survives the credit crunch, there'll be some other phase or some other fashion that everybody will pick up, and it goes around in cycles.
Yes, it does. And, you know, when you look at the cards from the late 1800s and you think about the printing technologies from that time, those cards are beautiful. They're really gorgeous cards.
Well, Roxanne, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for agreeing to come on to the show. It's been fascinating getting your insight on the hobby in general.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure, and I'll be anxious to listen to this and hear what the other women had to say.
Indeed. Well, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you.
Okay. I've been speaking to Roxanne Tozer, who is the publisher of Non-Sport Update magazine and is probably best regarded as the queen of the non-sport trading card. Well, that was Roxanne Tozer, and that is the end of part one of this episode. If you'd like to hear the interview with Joanna Kolbus and Kate Red Bradley, please download part two.